Hello and welcome to your Community Radio News Desk. I'm Adrienne Murphy. And coming up on today's programme, Michael Sullivan chats to Kim McCrave about the upcoming Special Olympics World Summer Games. Betty Magoon and Sonia Maloney from Phoenix FM talk to Evelyn Griffin about Canteen Youth Support Group. But first, as the issue of pay for artists continues at Ireland's National Theatre, the Abbey Theatre, I was joined by award-winning playwright Jimmy Murphy to discuss this issue. I began by asking him to explain the background to this dispute.
Before we were honorary, we were actually an active committee, and we would have informed the board throughout the course of our existence as to things we thought should and shouldn't be done. I think part of the problem is that with the Advisory Council now being honorary and not having any say in anything, sort of is one of the streets that has led us to where we are now.
Right. So explain where you are now, because I had a different idea as to what this pay dispute was about.
Yes.
So, yes, please explain.
The pay dispute that came about was, I suppose, the culmination of various threads of us. I mean, people were speaking to each other privately from around summer last year that the two men, and who were fairly, well, decent lads, but they were just out of their depth. They weren't really up to running a national theatre on the scale of the Abbey Theatre. So around May last year, as the programmes were announced, we began to see the pattern, and the pattern was not producing their own work, cherry-picking work that had already been done by other companies at their own cost, and bringing it in into the Abbey and the Peacock. In their first year, they did a thing like the greatest hits of Irish theatre, and that was wonderful, because it was giving them 6 months to just get their feet on the ground and find their way. So those first 6 months of the greatest hits were wonderful. But it became to be the linchpin that all they were doing was just picking plays that had proven themselves elsewhere, plays that would, you know, go to the Gaiety or go to the Pavilion or go to anywhere. They were taking them in. So as a result, there were a number of knock-on effects. One was they weren't producing their own plays, be they new plays by new or existing playwrights or adaptations. Mm. They weren't giving directors any work because the plays were coming in already directed by the directors from those companies. And there was no work for actors because the plays are already coming in cast. As well as that, there was no work for set designers or costume designers. Mm-hmm. And these would have been all foundation stones, certainly of a national theatre, that its remit was to produce its own work and to hire costume designers, set designers, directors and actors. And all that began the tap began to turn off. And so you had my own Christmas time just gone. People had just said, look, this is enough. They're bringing in a musical that's going to the West End. It's stopping off here. It's just for the money. And there's no Irish-based actors in it. Mm. And enough is enough. So the letter was the culmination of all those little conversations we were all having. And it sort of
now, what's this letter?
Got us all together again.
Sorry, what's this letter? Hmm? And just to tell the listeners, the two men you're talking about are the theatre's directors, Neil Murray and Graeme McLaren.
They came from the National Theatre of Scotland. One is a Welshman, one is a Scotsman. And I've worked with them. I had a great working relationship with them. Mm. But we had to put those things aside because it's the sake of the Abbey. But the letter spoke about actors, for one, not being employed for the first time in probably living memory, that there was no Irish-based actors, no actors at home here working over Christmas. It's a tough old profession, and for an actor, your Abbey gig gets you over the Christmas. It gets you in a position to be able to buy your kids presents, to pay your rent, to do the things we all take for granted that actors struggle to do because there's very little work. Mm. But also, prior to that, taking in some shows where Abbey actors were getting, who had special rate, or not special rates, but had reached a certain amount of pay. Mm. There's a structure. Every time you appear in the Abbey, you rise up to the top rate, which is around 970. Mm. They were getting paid less for appearing on the stage of the Abbey because they were coming in under a co-production. But yet the Abbey would charge the same price of tickets.
Yes.
So there was a split going to the Abbey and the co-producer who produced the show. Mm. But it was the actors who were paying for this out of their pocket, and some were taking, 10, 20, 30% cut in their wages. Mm. And that was really the last straw for some. Mm.
Well, it is always, I mean, through all of our arts, it's very, very sad that a lot of our artists have to go abroad. Actors have to go abroad to get recognition, to get good roles. The same with our musicians, the same right across the arts. And we really should be trying to give them opportunities here. And there is funding by the BAI for them to produce so many Irish plays. Why are they not using that funding? Is that going towards this cooperative of stuff coming from abroad?
You see, the funding, I mean, I don't know who the BIA is. I don't know. All I know is that the Arts Council is the umbrella of funding. But we're second last in Europe for arts funding. And yet we're renowned for our poets, our painters, and our playwrights. Mm. And I think for a country like Ireland, that's too quick to cast the dead poets and playwrights around the globe as cultural lures, that there should be some increase in funding. If they're going to make use of Kavanagh and Yeats and Joyce, they've got to look after the living ones. And Leo Varadkar promised a doubling of Arts Council or funding for the arts over 10 years. And we're not seeing any increase. Mm. If you look at theatres in Rome, Paris or Germany, some of those venues have budgets that we don't even, you know, the whole of Ireland doesn't get. So we're way behind, but yet we're producing work that's on the stages in London, on stages in New York. And like you said, our musicians are around the globe peddling their wares. And it's all being done by artists who are just scraping a living, scraping to get by. It wasn't always like this, and this is part of the problem. Back in 2007, when we all hit the crash, all the theatre companies were all their funding was taken away, and it hasn't been returned. So as a result, we have people whose careers were sort of put on ice. And it's too late to go back. If you're in your mid-40s, to go back and turn your back on acting and go somewhere else, it's just too late. We're in sort of a state of stasis. We're just not moving anywhere.
I mean, there's some actors, you know, are saying that they're just a couple of months away from homelessness.
That's sad to hear.
It's really sad to hear that we have such great actors. And then I think of the Abbey as such a fantastic place. I've gone to loads of plays there and really enjoyed them. And to think that we have such fantastic actors here and such a fantastic place to put
that's
on plays.
That's heartbreaking.
It is.
That musical could have gone to the gate. The people who like musicals, they'll fly to London, they go to New York, to Broadway, to, you know, they love that. That music would have packed out in Bord Gáis. It would certainly have packed out the gate. It didn't have to come to the Abbey. And we just are at a loss to understand what the thinking was. Why these two men who were on 110 grand each a year thought it was okay to leave a host of Irish actors on the dole for Christmas without an opportunity of a day's work. And not just actors, the set designers. There was no set designer on that show. There was no background crew on that show who were based here. Mm. And that's just not right. You know, it seems that the two men are just so out of touch with the reality of Irish theatre and Irish arts that they thought it was okay to bring in a show that is funded by the taxpayer, ostensibly to give Irish artists work, and not one Irish artist. Walked in the National Theatre over Christmas. And that's to the shame of the board as well, because they've allowed this happen too. And it's just enough is enough. We're meeting the Dáil on Wednesday, and then we're meeting the Abbey, I think, at 6, because it's come to a head now and something has to give, something has to change. The programme that they've announced this year, I mean, there's another musical from Glasgow coming in a couple of weeks called The Glasgow Girls. Mm-hmm. Again, no work for Irish actors.
Yeah.
Something has to give. The programme will need to be reconsidered and new work will have to come in. And don't forget, new plays can take anything from a year to 2 years. Mm. They need to start commissioning playwrights and they need to bring back the casting department. This was a cornerstone of the Abbey.
And that was Irish playwright Jimmy Murphy there. Now, Canteen is a support group for young people between the ages of 12 and 25 years who have or have had cancer. Evelyn Griffin from Canteen Ireland spoke to Betty Magoon and Sonia Maloney from Phoenix FM about the organisation.
Canteen Ireland is a support group, a national support group for young people between the ages of 12 and 25 who have or have had cancer. So if they've cancer as a child or cancer as a teenager, they can join us. And we're a nationwide group, so we have members from all over Ireland. And our, basically what we do is we bring them away on weekends, and we have day support meetings, and we offer just like peer support. So basically just for them to hang out, do normal teenage things, get away from hospital. They can bring a brother or sister or friend with them. And it's just to give them a chance to have a normal teenage life, to what cancer kind of takes from them when they're during treatment and afterwards.
How many patients, like, would you see, like, that age group? Are there lots, high numbers? And
well, thankfully, it's quite rare. So about 200 children and teenagers are diagnosed with cancer every year. So when you think roughly about 25, 30,000 adults, it is a quite rare. But I suppose the thing with teenagers, it's such a difficult time already. And so being a teenager is difficult enough, and then having a diagnosis of cancer on top of that. And then there's also a lot of long-term effects from their treatment. So that can happen, you know, especially because their treatment is, I mean, obviously it's great when it works and it saves their lives, but they can have long-term effects as well. So that's something when they come to Canteen, they get to meet other young people. A lot of our volunteers who come away with us had cancer when they were young. So they see young people and adults like 10, 20 years down the line getting on with life and doing normal things and doing stuff that they're, you know, they hope they can do.
And is your organisation, are there full-time employees or is it volunteer-led?
I'm the only employee, so we depend hugely on our volunteers. So we go on about 8 or 9 weekends away a year, and for every weekend or activity, a day set, we have about 6 day meetings as well. So we try and have one volunteer for every 4 young people, just because of, well, any of them if they're sick or anything like that.
And you must be quite busy if you're the only one employee, are you?
Yeah, because it's kind of a mixture of everything. You know, you're from fundraising to organising the weekends to talking to newly diagnosed young people and their parents and families and stuff like that. It's very varied.
And who funds your organisation?
Well, we don't get government funding, so it's mostly fundraised. Now, we do get some grants, like from the Irish Cancer Society and the City of Dublin Youth Services Board, but the majority, 95% of our money would be fundraised by our families, friends, members, anyone who knows us. And like a lot of people who hear about us, they, you know, we're very lucky that the young people, their families and friends have been so supportive for us.
Very good. And who set up the organisation?
Well, it was set up in May 1990. And basically they realised when a lot of teenagers and children were in hospital, when they went home, there was no support really. So when they're in hospital, they're very well looked after and cared for. And it was when they went home, they kind of realised that because we don't have a dedicated teenage cancer unit in Ireland, they're treated either with children or adults. So a lot of teenagers went home and they might never have met another teenager who understood what they were going through. And obviously they felt very alone and isolated and, oh, am I the only person who has cancer or, you know, who's been through this? So some social workers met up and came together and they had their first meeting in the Irish Cancer Society in May 1990. And then a few years later, we became known as Canteen. So because there's a group in Australia and we asked them, could we use the name?
Fantastic idea. It's great work, really great support, because sometimes when you are diagnosed with something like cancer, it's nice to know you're not alone, that there are other people who maybe how they have survived or what, you know. Would you like to say a little bit about cancer itself, or are you in that area at all?
Well, I was a nurse and I worked in oncology in the matter before I started working with Canteen. And I suppose the thing about cancer, I suppose the treatment is often worse than the disease. So thankfully for young people and children, the cure rates are really good, up to 80-90% in lots of cancers. And the most common cancers in children and teenagers is like leukemia, Hodgkin's lymphoma, bone tumours and brain tumours. So they're the most common ones. There are some rarer tumours that they get as well. And obviously the treatment is very aggressive. So for leukemia, it can be 2 to 3 years, depending on their, if a boy or a girl. So the treatment is very long term. And they're treated often in Dublin hospitals away from their friends and their families. They can be in isolation for long periods of time, so they don't get to spend time with other young people and their friends. And, you know, when you're a teenager, your peer support is really important and your friends are really important. They don't want to hang out with their parents. And for a lot of them, you know, their parents try wrap them up in cotton wool, which is completely normal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the teenagers want to be themselves
being
and hang out with,
yes,
they want
exactly.
to be hanging out with their friends and doing normal things mm-hmm. and going to their discos or going to whatever they're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I suppose in canteen, that's what we try to give them that back, that sense of normality and just being a normal young person.
Yeah, you know? That sounds great. And I'm just, as I'm listening to you there, I'm just kind of thinking, like, I suppose it's like any cancer, if it's got in time, it's curable.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's, you know, diagnosis, early diagnosis obviously is really important. Now, unfortunately, sometimes with teenagers, because it's quite rare, a lot of GPs won't see it. So sometimes they might get diagnosed later.
Later, yes.
And it could be unfortunate, you know, for
too
their treatment.
Then,
yeah.
Yes,
and sometimes, yeah, not
yes.
all, it doesn't work all the time. And a lot of the cancers can be very aggressive in young people as well. Mm-hmm. Like, they can treat them aggressively, but unfortunately not all survive, sadly enough. So we do lose young people as well, and it's really difficult.
I'd say that's heart-wrenching on yourselves, like working with them, yes.
Yeah, and especially then for the friends, because some of them, like, they're best friends for life. Mm-hmm. And so when we do lose somebody, you know, it's like losing some part of your family, especially in canteen. So mm-hmm. it can be really heartbreaking. And we try to remember them and keep in contact with their families and just to know that we're, you know, we always think of them, especially anniversaries and birthdays and things like that. Yeah.
And it's up to the age of, from what age to 25?
Yeah, from 12 to 25.
So after 25, you're the adult then, I suppose.
Yeah, and then you can come back and volunteer with us. So as I said, we've about 15 adults who had cancer themselves and they come back and volunteer.
Oh, that's nice, yeah. Keep the momentum and the connection going.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Mater there, you worked in the Mater. They have a great backup service, the ARC Centre?
For the adults now mostly, for 18s.
Yes,
it's a brilliant centre.
Yes, I've kind of heard about that before. And you're here to tell us about, you did mention before you went about the concert, Home Sweet Home, what you're here to talk about. But you go away about 8 weekends per year.
So this weekend, actually Friday, we're going up to the Share Centre in Fermanagh.
Okay.
So we do different activities, like there's arts and crafts, there's rock climbing, laser combat, all these really cool activities, swimming pool and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the young people, the members coming can bring a brother or sister or friend with them. Mm-hmm. And we only charge like €20 to go on the weekends and we pay the rest.
That's
so we also go we go to England twice a year. The Teenage Cancer Trust have a really cool conference on called Find Your Sense of Tumour. And we go there over there as well. And we've been to Disneyland.
Sense of humour as well.
Yes, yeah. And it is. It's about, and that's the way, like, some of them would talk about it. If people heard them, they'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe they're talking about cancer like that.
Yes, yeah.
But that's the way they deal with it.
Yeah.
And it's their sense of humour.
Yeah, yeah. And I think sometimes we all need a sense of humour to carry us through whatever challenges we're faced with.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's very good. And how many would go on this weekend?
Well, this weekend, about 30 young people.
30?
Yeah.
So you need a good few volunteers to...
So 8 or 10 volunteers,
they are working out successful?
Yes.
And who came up with this brainwave of an idea to work with them this way?
Well, I suppose when we first started, it was mostly like people volunteered, were health professionals.
Yes.
And then once the young people in canteen grew up, they realised that, well, you know, I want to stay involved. Mm-hmm. So like our chairperson, Liam, at the moment, he was diagnosed like 25 years ago and he's still involved with canteen. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, and I suppose for them as well, they want to give something back. Mm-hmm. So canteen was really important when they were young and sick and they got to meet great friends and the volunteers and become great friends with everybody, so they wanted just to come back and give something back to the young people.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, really, how it works? But it sounds fantastic.
Oh, it is. It's great fun. And, you know, like, we have some videos up on our website and our Facebook page and everything. And it is. It's all about having fun because, you know.
And that's so necessary in what they're going through.
Mm, exactly.
You know, because, like, I think in any walk of life, we all forget the fun side if we're going through a crisis.
Yeah.
So
it's just important to have, you know.
That support there. It is referral for the children to go to canteen.
Yeah, well, basically you can just ring us or text or email me in the office, evelyn@canteen.ie.
Yes.
Now, mostly it's through the hospitals they would hear about us, but anyone out there today who hasn't heard about us, we're always willing to... Yes. Delighted and they join, and because they do get a lot out of it and they will meet other young people. And
And so maybe there are listeners out there who are struggling with their emotional side of after being diagnosed and not realising that canteen is available.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is it a nationwide?
Yeah.
It is.
So we have members from Cork to Donegal.
And that was Evelyn Griffin from Canteen Ireland, and our thanks to Phoenix FM for that piece. If you would like more information on this topic, you can contact Canteen on 01 872 2012 or info@canteen.ie. And finally, having previously hosted one of the most successful Summer Special Olympics Games, the Irish Special Olympics team of 2019 are getting ready for this year's Games in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. Michael Sullivan spoke to Kim McCrave from Special Olympics Ireland and began by asking her if the excitement had reached fever pitch yet.
Oh, absolutely. So last Friday was our launch night, so everything became real. The athletes received their official Irish kit, and we had a couple of celebrities pass on messages, Michael Fassbender, President Higgins, and the excitement was second to none. So really getting ready to gear up on the kind of final few weeks leading to going away.
Now, we have a 91-strong team heading over to Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, we sure do. So 91 athletes from all over Ireland, and they competed at the Irish Games last year and would have received gold in their selected sport. And then they were lucky enough to be selected from the quota to represent Ireland. And alongside those athletes, we have over 30 management, volunteers, coaches, coach chaperones. So a good big team heading over to Abu Dhabi in March.
And I see we have quite a range of sports: aquatics, athletics, basketball, equestrian, football, golf. That's one I like myself.
One for you.
Yeah. Gymnastics, kayaking, table tennis, and 10-pin bowling. Where do you think we're going to pick up the medals?
Well, I'm hoping in badminton. That's my sport, and I'm coaching three athletes in badminton, so I'm hoping we'll definitely pick one or two up in there. We've three athletes, John, Mary and Sarah Louise, so that would be nice to pick something up there. Now, we have great chance in all fields. We've super strong teams in the football, and look, all the athletes have the potential. They're recording personal bests. One of our golfers had a hole-in-one a couple of weeks ago in practice and training.
Can you teach me how to do that?
Well, I know, I tell you, we could all do with a lesson there in getting a hole-in-one.
Indeed. Now, I can only say all the work and preparation is done, I'd say, at this stage. And it's about keeping their minds in focus, I take it.
Yes, so really, you know, all their skills, preparation, getting used to their partnerships, if they're in a partnered sport, getting used to their teammates, a lot of that is done now. So it's keeping the mind active and focused on the games. It's looking at keeping yourself healthy. You know, Abu Dhabi is a very different climate to Ireland, as we know. So, you know, getting ready for that. Lots of sunscreen needed. And also just looking after ourselves, making sure we're not carrying any injuries going into the World Games as well.
And I know we had a very successful World Games here a few years ago. Is there any sign of it coming back to us?
Oh, we would absolutely love to have it back to us. I think that was 2003, so it was a good few years ago now. But it's good to see it floating out to the UAE and, you know, exposure out there. Good thing to note is we have quite a few Irish officials travelling for basketball, badminton and a couple of other sports. So their experience from the Irish Games and games in Los Angeles 4 years ago is all being taken on board, and you know, we're giving back to Special Olympics on the world level as well. So I think we're always a contender to have it back.
And of course, we have to get Dublin in here somewhere on the Christmas. I think there's 26 athletes coming from Dublin.
Yes, we've a good cohort coming from Dublin and good few coaches coming from Dublin also, myself included. So we'll be thinking about the Dubs over there all, as always.
What will be the most difficult part of the trip, do you think?
I think acclimatising to the country, the different heat. It's going to be extremely difference to Ireland. We'll be around the 28 to 30 degrees over there at that time. So luckily we're not any later in the year. But also there will be different cultural aspects that we'll have to get used to, which is no challenge to us really, but just something new for us all to experience.
And I understand age is no barrier in the Special Olympics. You have people from, you know, all ages, from kind of 19 to I believe 79.
Yes, and that's what's wonderful about it. There's no barriers in the Special Olympics at all, you know. We're all out there doing our best. You know, they're aiming to win, but if they can't win, they're brave in the attempt and taking on the challenges, which a lot of us could learn from. But yeah, great team bond, and really age is no barrier.
And how can our listeners support you?
Okay, so there will be volunteer days in which we'll be out looking for fundraising. And you'll notice us generally will have red volunteer T-shirts on. So there'll be people out shaking buckets. I know there'll be some schools doing some fundraisers, sometimes a superhero team. We're all superheroes underneath. And also there's sponsor and athlete that maybe bigger organisations might like to get involved with as well. And they can go to Special Olympics Ireland website and all the information is on there.
And I was talking to Sinead yesterday, and she said that you might be able to organise some of the athletes to drop into the studio here and have a chat with us live on air.
That would be fantastic, and we can definitely especially put the feeler out to some of the Dublin-based athletes, and that would be a little bit more local, wouldn't have as much travelling, as we're obviously athletes from all over the country, and it would be lovely to get them in and get them involved and see the inside of a studio as well, but also to hear them and promote what they do themselves.
Exactly, and we'd love them to come in as well. So hopefully over the next week or two we'll get that done, because we can't leave it too late, because it's we're heading to March very quickly, aren't we?
We sure are. It's less than 50 days till we travel. We'll be travelling on the 7th of March, leaving Dublin Airport. So we're hoping we'll have a few supporters out there to cheer us on our way. And of course, also our homecoming, which will be the 22nd of March. We'd always love to see supporters, and when we're bringing back our haul of medals and our experiences, and, you know, cheer us on.
Well, I have to say, I like that. That's the power of positive thinking. We're bringing back a haul of medals.
Well, that's it, isn't it? The medals, but do you know what? The experiences, meeting new people, new countries, you know, quite often can outshadow the medals. But we have to be positive.
And that was Kim McCrave from Special Olympics Ireland. And if you would like more information on this item, you can contact them at info@specialolympics.ie or by phone on 01 882 3972.